recently somebody came up to me and asked about a pastor who was in this town for years, and they said, you know, he used to have such great vision, and he was such a great communicator, and they went on and on. He was so incredibly used by God to, was it all fake? And I said, what do you mean? Well, and then the way everything ended tragically with his lifestyle, I said, I don't think it was fake. I think it was a matter of the heart. And I said, I think one of the greatest difficulties, and it's so sad, that God can bless us with is success. And once you have success, all of a sudden it's your success, not his success, and you start taking credit, and on and on and on, and all of a sudden you deserve, and blah, blah, blah. And no, I think he had a heart attack, a spiritual heart attack. He just forgot. And this is a guy, you know, with a high school diploma and leading one of the largest churches in the country, and then all of a sudden, wow, it's a spiritual heart attack. We're going to look at that today. And the passage we're looking at, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I've got to constantly be doing the circle of the Beatitudes. And the top of the circle at 12 o'clock, blessed are the poor in spirit. I've got to constantly know, not initially that I need God, but I forever need God. I initially need God for what he did for me to get me a relationship with him, but then I need to every day spend time to need God. And then it goes on, blessed are those who mourn, and it just needs to break my heart what it cost. What it cost him to take off his robe and his crown. I constantly need to be absolutely in shock. And then that ought to do the next one. Blessed are the meek or the humble. It ought to humble me underneath the plan of God. Humble. And then the next one. And this is I love verse 6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Everybody hungers and thirsts for something. Mm-hmm. Really want that. I'll be happy when I get that. Who hunger and thirst, what? For righteousness. Mm-hmm. That's my hunger and thirst. You got the rest, Lord. And then that should lead me to the next one. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. How could I not be merciful after the mercy he's shown me? Merciful. And then today's. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the pure in heart. There's a purity here that I need to not just get, but maintain. And that's the hard part. You know, it's funny, one of the hardest things for me getting glasses is they need to be cleaned all the time, all the time. And just giving these little wipey things and cleaning them all the time. And you even corrected me one day in the hallway, your glasses are filthy. It's like I got this cleanliness Nazi going around the hallway. Your glasses are filthy. It was absolutely hilarious. Yeah, it's a constant. It's not a once and for all. It's a constant. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. For they shall see God. When Tori was in fourth grade, and Tori's got my personality, so it was a constant. Rosemary was the referee in our home. She's strong, and it'll surprise you, but I'm strong. And watching this, and she came to me and said, I can't see the fourth grade. I can't see the blackboard. I'm thinking, oh, really? This is why, whatever. And so I take her to Ed Miller, my friend, Dr. Miller, the eye guy, and he puts her in front of the machine, and she's a little afraid of this machine. Ed Miller has the most massive eye thing I've ever seen. And so he sees that she's nervous, and she's even closing her eyes a little bit. And so he asks her to get up and watch, and he puts me in front of the machine. And when he put me in front of the machine, he said, Tori, this is how it's going to be. And then he said, Bob, read the letters on the wall. I said, I can't. And he said, stop messing around. Just read the letters on the wall. I said, Ed, I can't. And he said, what do you mean? I said, it's not my fault. You got the wrong size letters on the wall for me. And so he says, Tori, would you wait outside here? I need to work with your dad a little. And he said, I can't even believe you drove here and you can't read those letters. He said, haven't you had a difficulty seeing things out on the road? I said, yeah, the street signs I can't read till I'm right on them. And he said, and you're driving like that. And he said, you know what's sad is you've lost much of your vision and you've acclimated to it. You've gotten used to it. He put glasses on me, and Tori didn't need glasses, these dorky glasses, just so I could drive home till Rosemary came back and picked out the glasses. And I realized, oh my goodness. And Tori said at first, I can see leaves. And when we came outside of his office, I realized, wow. But the problem is, when we kind of lose or get used to bad vision, We get used to it. We get used to mediocre walk with God. We just get used to it. We acclimate to it, and we think that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever asked anybody, have you seen the Atlantic Ocean? No one's ever seen the Atlantic Ocean. You've seen a little bit of the Atlantic Ocean, but no one's seen it. And that's the key here that we have to get past. Question, have you ever seen God? Now, you haven't seen God, but you've seen God's hand. Mm-hmm. Can I just say, if you work here in the ministry, you have seen so much of God's hand. But if we either get used to it or don't see it for what it is, we miss it. We miss it. And I know I've told this story too many times, but it's this campus for one. And this campus was for the GNC Vitamin King, who was going to build factories here for vitamins for South America. And it became apparent no factories are going to be built here because of these million-dollar homes behind us. And so he was ready to give it up. And he put it for sale for $500,000 an acre. And three friends encouraged me to go make an offer. And we went and make an offer. Instead of $500,000, I offered $50,000 an acre. And he countered for $53,000 an acre instead of $500,000 an acre. Instead of $30 million, $3.1 million. And yeah, that. But see, you're a businessman. You get that. I walked out with these three guys to lunch, and they said, you don't look happy. And I said, I know, $30 million versus $3 million. But $3 million? And they said, how much is your now salary? I said, we've got $10,000. And watching it happen and watching churches and people each buy an acre, and in 24 months, it was paid off. And then the city comes to us and said, I hate to tell you, add this to your burden, but we have to put a pipe under Flamingo from the community that's getting ready to be built over there to here, and it's a little under $1 million. To get the pipe going and all the stuff that needs to, as we tear up the road, whatever. And I said, really? And they came back and said, I can't believe it. We found the pipe. They'd already done the pipe and then abandoned the project across the street. The pipe is done. And watching, if you work here, you've seen God. Over and over and over, we need things. And honestly, can I say, two separate people have sent money for turkeys. It's hilarious. It's like, how do you get these turkeys? And I said, I don't know how we get these turkeys. And somebody from Gainesville sent in for one, and then Robert Taylor buys them for also, and two separate. How? I don't know. Yeah. We've seen the hand of God, and it's pivotal to know that. God's hand is working all around us. I miss seeing it because the eyes of my heart need correction. I need new glasses on my heart. And there are seasons of life that are difficult and hard to figure out, and what's going on, Lord, and I don't understand it. And he said, Bob, you either trust me or you don't. You trust me or you don't. Yeah, bottom line, God's hand is working all around us, and he loves you personally more than this piece of property. This property's not going to heaven, this campus. He loves you. Done. But I've got to get used to trusting enough and observing the little things and the big things. It's interesting. Rosemary has a book called The Blessings Book. And she writes in The Blessings Book, every morning after Devos, she tries to find 5 to 10 things where she saw God's hand and a blessing the day before. And she's closing it. Was it 4,000? She's closing
it. 1,000 gifts, but she had, how many does Rosemary have?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot. The difficulty for me was when I asked her if I was any one of the blessings, and she decided not to answer that question, so I don't know what that means. But anyway, focusing on what he does. Yeah. Causes for spiritual blindness. It's congenital. My blinded spiritual vision begins with a birth defect called sin. That's why this cycle of the Beatitudes starts with, blessed are the poor in spirit, when you know you desperately need him. And then it's not only congenital, it's emotional. My heart needs to break over my condition and what God did about it. Blessed are those who mourn. It needs to break my heart. Because he's doing things we can see constantly. But we miss it. Because we're not looking. Because we're doing whatever we think we need to check off and check off and check off. Yeah. I do want to see God's obvious hand in my life. If I do, what do I need to do? Well, it's the next beatitude. It's an issue of humbling myself. It's not just a willingness to humble myself or a strong desire to humble myself. It's doing it. It's doing it. Yeah. Which is blessed are the meek or humble. Whether I understand this, I know you want me to do this, what I just read in your word. It's your word to me. Yeah. And then it's my, this, you know, it's the desires of my heart, getting the desires of my heart lined up. Yeah, it's an insatiable appetite for his approval. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for him. For him. Yeah, I want to hear silently, well done, son. Well done. When we go the extra mile. When you risk that day and ask that mom to speak to those students. Remember over here who came late and just, could you come on time? We've got stuff to do here. And you stayed and you were blessing her. And God, it's so cool how you risked. And she ended up being a blessing. God used her in a very strange way, speaking to those students. Yeah, I want to see your hand. So I've got to look and I've got to be doing my part. I absolutely have to do my part. Find the balance of discipling my life without judging others for the way they live. In fact, giving myself to others regardless of their lifestyle. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. So if anybody ever did that, it was Jesus. I mean, the prostitute that he changes her life, leads her to himself, and she becomes part of the group that's traveling and doing whatever. Wow. But we think, we like to pick her out as how horrible was she. That's not anymore. She's not any more horrible than me. There's not a hierarchy of sin. My sin's not so bad. Her sin was horrible. No. Sin is sin is sin is sin. And so, yeah, I've got to decide. I'm going to minister to others regardless of them, their lifestyle, whether we have anything in common or not. So, question, and we asked this once before, why is this so difficult? I think that the evil one sends those who have no gratitude at all. This is it, or whatever they say. And it's not a test of them. Yeah, it's a test of us. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, it's almost like the angel's intensively watching us. Is he going to get this? And there's always one at every single mom event that's not in a good place and says something really stupid, and I'm wanting to look at her, and I realize, whoa, I don't know what she's dealing with. And all the trust issues. Yeah. Wow, very good. Any other thought on why it's difficult sometimes to minister to people who couldn't be more different from us? So interesting. Years ago when the ladies in the two ladies Bible studies found out we didn't pay Rosemary, that on things like her birthday or the end of the year, they put money in her in an envelope and they all give it to her. And she keeps this envelope of money to give away. And there's a restaurant we go to, and there's one of the waitresses that she's been sharing with, and we walk in and she asks for her, and the lady was wearing next to no clothes, and just knowing her, and she's avoided us initially. I would wait until we asked, can I get some ketchup? And then when she's coming back, I'd say, Rosemary, let's pray. So she has to watch us pray, and knows we're believers, so she, and Christians have a horrible reputation for tipping. And so that we leave her a stupid tip. But Rosemary always leaves her more. And she tested slowly over a period of time. Rosemary said, why don't you come to church with us? And she finally agreed to meet us in church. And it's me, Rosemary, and this woman, this young 40-year-old. Like, I cannot believe how inappropriately dressed she was. And watching the friends walk by, I realize I can't imagine how uncomfortable. They're laughing at me, actually. I don't even want to look down there. And watching her slowly grow, and Rosemary be very generous to her, and it's so much so that her parents are believers, and they go to Willow Creek in Chicago, and they flew into town for 2 days, and they asked for a tour of Sheridan House, and asked to meet with me, and it hit me, they thought she had joined a cult, and they were asking me all kinds of spiritual questions, and they were all concerned, and they realized, no, we're not a cult. But it was so bizarre that their daughter would be going to church with anybody and coming here for help. And it hit me that I get it. There could not be two more different people and from a secular vision between Rosemary and her. And yet, we're not that far apart in the eyes of God, but he forgives us. Yeah, so the picture is, I want to see God, and he's asking me, be merciful. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the merciful. Yeah, for they shall receive mercy. Bob, how can you not be merciful after what I've done for you, son? Yeah, getting to see God's hand in my life is not so much about what I do, it's more about the core, my motives for what I do, my why. So a couple of weeks ago, I started slamming at home in the two men's Bible studies about giving. Your giving needs to ramp up during this time. You need to be giving more money during this time than ever in history, because there are people out there that need help. And so tithe, in the words of Chuck Swindoll, a tithe is for third world Christians, not for Americans. Which initially when I heard that, like, wow, are you kidding? And watching. But so he had one of them in the room asked the question, so how do you choose who to give to? And I'm stupid initially. Give to anything that says Sheridan on the front end. And they're laughing like, what did you expect me to say? I said, if it doesn't bring glory to God, I don't give. I have a friend who runs in the autism, whatever, 5K every year, and he's very wealthy, and he said he 1 year sent $20,000 to Rosemary and I at 10 and 10 in our 5K, and I sent him $25. And we were together for lunch when he was back in town, just home here, and he said, that's it? And I said, it doesn't glorify God. I give $25 basically for you, but if what I'm giving to, it's not my money, it's his money. It has to glorify God. And we had a church call up in Fort Lauderdale and say, we're giving groceries to the city of Fort Lauderdale to give away to people in need for Thanksgiving. If you have any left, can we have it, take it up there? I said, no. What do you mean, no? No. Doesn't glorify God. We're going to find a church that's going to give it away from the church. It needs to glorify God. That's what we're here to do. We're here to glorify God. Period. End of story. Yeah, my why is to glorify you, Lord. Yeah. So some reasons we do things. Am I doing this to serve myself? The things I'm doing, is it to serve myself? Or am I doing this to serve others? And initially that sounds great. I'm doing this to serve others. It's got to be more than that, though. Yeah, because it's got to be letter C. Am I doing this to serve God? And when I'm doing this to serve God, that's when turkeys arrive. That's when the funny things happen. Okay, angels, they've got it. They're doing this to serve God. Bring it. And this is a process for a ministry like yours, but it's a process for each of us individually as well. Why am I doing this? You know, and Jesus, there's a time, and I want to see the look on his face when Jesus confronts the scribes and Pharisees. Scribes and Pharisees were pathetic. You see in the New Testament, they spent so many times meeting to plot to murder Jesus. The patience of Jesus to murder, how do we kill him? How do we get him killed? How do we get him executed? And he confronts him in Matthew 23:25. Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup and plate, that the outside may be clean. It's a heart issue. And unfortunately, in our culture, much of the religion in our culture, it's very, very interesting. We have learned how to be religious, how to do things religious, so people see us religious. When I was the interim at New Testament Baptist Church, I can't even believe I'm telling you this, but when I was the interim at New Testament Baptist Church, every year they had like 150 employees, they made all employees re-sign a contract and re-sign a covenant. And of the things they believe and things they will and won't do. And honestly, one of them was they won't partake in alcohol of any kind. And then they wanted me as the pastor to sign off so that they're re-employed. And I had to meet with everybody, the leaders, the elders, and the deacons, and say, I got to tell you something. Every now and then I have a glass of wine. I don't see Jesus turning the wine into water. And so I can't sign this unless you take out page 4, all of it. all the rules. Take out page four. And so they pulled out page four, and two pastors met with me, and it was hilarious. And so I'm finishing the Christmas service, and I'm walking out, and the chairman of the elders walks me to the car and hands me a cylindrical bag. I look at Rick Romero, and I say, Rick, if I didn't know any better, I mean, in the parking lot, are you handing me a bottle of wine? And he says, yeah, my family owns a vineyard. And you're the chairman of the elders? And you've signed off on this every year? Help me understand that. And he realized immediately he was sorry he gave me the cylindrical bag. It's like, wow. We've learned to act like we're jumping through the hoops rather than out there. And I've got to say, probably the hardest person, child to love, is the one that gives you the hardest time and doesn't want help. And I've told this before, but I dedicated the book Raising Confident Kids to Mr. Perna, my sixth grade teacher, and I sent it to him. He changed my life. I was a disaster, and Mr. Perna changed my life, and actually my first male teacher, and I called Nassau County School Board and asked for his address, and they wouldn't give it, and I said, well, I've written a book, and I've dedicated it when he was my teacher, and they finally, she caved in and said, here's his address, he's retired, and I sent it to him, and I got a letter back from him, and I realized he has no idea who I am. I was a little irked at first. Are you kidding me? And it was Rosemary that said, can you imagine how many boys like you who did fourth grade twice because of your behavior? How many boys like you? Wow. He helped. He said, that's a compliment to God. Don't take it personal. Yeah, the picture here is, wow, they're constantly planning to murder him? And the calling here? Yeah. A mandatory yet challenging part of the Christian walk is the ongoing process of keeping a pure heart. A heart with pure, humble, God-honoring motives. That's the only way we will see God's hand. Yeah, only way. I mean, I think that starts with an ongoing confession. Father, forgive me for what I just thought. Forgive me for my anger. Forgive me for what I looked at, walked by. Forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. Yeah, guard my eyes and my heart. Forgive me. Take captive every thought. It says in Romans 12:1, which pretty much is in every one of my Bible studies, I appeal to you, therefore. Bob, I appeal to you, brothers, by the mercies of God, by how merciful he's been to you. Are you kidding? By the mercies of God, because he knows you, Bob, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, that I need to find ways to give it up regularly. A living and holy sacrifice that's acceptable to him in a way he'll go, well done, son. I know that was way out of your comfort. Well done. Bottom line, I told the board in 1974 when they hired me, there's two things I will never do. I just wanted to make sure. There were three employees in one house for boys in Hollywood. I said, I will never speak in public, and I will never do any fundraising. I kind of think that's your job. I mean, two pastors on the board. And I'll never forget the risk of filling the pulpit at potential church when they didn't have a pastor. And I told them I'd do it for a month, and I ended up doing it for 3 years. A lady shows up here Tuesday night with cassette tapes from my time there. She had two. Do you want the rest? I've got them all. Do you want the rest? I said, have you listened to them? She said, well, I don't have a cassette player. I said, well, let me help you. I'll take them. Thank you. But years ago when we had the walls lined in them with cassette tapes, Bonetta said, you need to listen to these. And I got a cassette player. The messages were horrible. I listened to two all the way through, and I said to Bonetta, throw them out. They're horrible. And she's laughing, and apparently she'd already listened to them and didn't want to agree with me, but she agreed with me. It's not a matter of how good we are at what we do. It's a matter of why we're doing it. Lord, you know this is way past me to fill the pulpit. I've never known fear like that. Way past me. Present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. Yeah, it says in James 4:8, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. He's writing this to the church. James is writing a letter to the church. He's got us. So, this is a heart issue, a desire issue. What do I desire? Yeah, what? It's a desire. I want you to be proud of me, Father. I want to serve you, Father. I want to serve you. Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for it affects everything you do. Yeah, and again in Mark 7:21, for from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting. Wow, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. Yeah, all these things come from within, come from the heart. It's a matter of desire. It's a matter of what am I hungering and thirsting for? Yeah, so picture this guy. This guy was an amazing leader and writer. His name was David. And when he was running for his life, it was amazing. He's running for his life, and he's in the caves, and he's writing part of the Psalms, and amazing. I mean, he wrote part of the Bible. And all of a sudden, he becomes king in Israel, and he looks around, and he sees what other kings have lots of wives. Maybe I should have lots of wives. And he ended up with 5 wives and 200 concubines. And then all of a sudden, he's wandering around the roof after a nap, and he must have had his iPad and clicked on a website called Bathsheba. And friended her or whatever, and he calls for her, and his friends say, "Don't do it. You know her husband and her dad. They're your mighty men. Those two." And not only does he sleep with her, he gets her pregnant and has her husband murdered. It's a slow leap from serving and serving and serving and serving. It's a slow leap to all of a sudden just a baby step, and all of a sudden I'm serving me, and my desires and my needs. Yeah. Guard a pure heart for God. Keep the dirt out of your heart by not letting anything other than serving Jesus captivate your heart. Not even the success of serving Jesus. Success shouldn't be an issue. That's his job. Just serving Jesus. Yeah, and you know this verse. This is also in pretty much every Bible study. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Start there, Bob. Trust in the Lord for the future, for your needs, for your finances, with all your heart. And do not lean to your own understanding, because, son, when I take a while to answer your prayers, I mean, how much longer, Lord? Then slowly, as I take a while, and slowly, then all of a sudden, wow, I can't, how did I get here? No, don't lean to your own understanding. My understanding is I need to do something, but I've waited on you. I'd never say that out loud, but no. Yeah. In all your ways, in every decision, in everything you think, acknowledge him. And he will direct your path. He will make your path straight. He will direct you. Isn't that what we want? I want him to direct my path. Also, letter B, not letting sin of any kind creep into your heart. Creep into your heart. Sin of envy. Sin of bitterness. Sin of a lack of forgiveness. Yeah. Above all else, guard your heart. For it is the wellspring of life. The wellspring of life. So a guy asked a question. The Thursday morning Bible study is different from all the others. I mean, I can't believe what they put on the table. And he asked a question and said, "So, you know, I'm married, been married for a long time, and what do you do? I mean, how does this apply of doing these things when you're married and your wife's not meeting your needs?" And I said, "Well, did you take vows till needs do us part?" I mean, I didn't take those vows. And can I also say, it's not her job to meet my needs. From my perspective, it's my job to meet her needs. She's standing before God. And he said, "How did you get there?" And I said, "It was a very interesting journey." Rosemary and I were speaking out at Baylor to engaged couples and anybody else that wanted to come. And the final thing was a Q&A, and one little girl asked, "What were the first few years of your marriage like?" And me being really stupid, I answered first. Yeah, I should have waited and let her answer. And I said, "Well, you know, the first couple of years were an adjustment to marrying somebody so different from me." And then they looked at Rosemary, and she had a stupid smirk on her face. And she said, "The first 8 to 10 years of marriage were a nightmare." Everybody laughs, and she's laughing. And I realized it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. It was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. And we were on the plane flying back from Texas, and I said, so help me with that. That was hilarious, but they thought you were kidding. I realized you weren't kidding. And she said, well, your first years at Sheridan House, that was your priority. It's a 7-day program. You work 7 days a week. And so that was absolutely, I mean, that's why we both moved in, so we could be together. That was your priority. And she said, and it changed. And I know why it changed. And it changed because when she was pregnant with Tori, 7 months pregnant, she had a seizure. I raced her to the hospital. Dr. Nolan came to meet with me after they ran her through the emergency room and said, we don't think she's going to make it. We're going to try to rescue her and the baby. And I'm out in the parking lot of Memorial screaming so loud they could hear me. That's a big hospital. Screaming at God, you took my mom. Now you're going to take my wife. And they finally, after a couple hours, bring me back in. Everything's okay. They're both going to be okay. And so I said, can I see you? She said, no, not yet. And you have a little girl, 3-pound little girl, but everything's going to be okay. And so pastors from around found out about it. I'm there for 2 hours, and they show up, and they come walking in. It was Dan Sutherland said to me, don't miss the lesson here. This was obviously for a lesson. I was mad at him, actually. I was kind of looking at him like, what could this lesson be? And then the next week, I'm having lunch with Jim Vigorito. Jim Vigorito, on the old campus, was a PhD from Princeton. He was one of the psychologists here, and he was such an egghead. And we're going out to lunch, and he said, I've just realized that God's not only my father, he's also my father-in-law. I said, what does that mean? He said, every time you pray to your father, you're praying to Rosemary's father. And if you're not taking care of her and meeting her needs, why should he ever answer your prayers? It's his daughter. You're not taking care of his daughter. Those two things changed all my priorities. I prefer Jesus did it without putting me through so much trauma. But maybe that's the only way I hear and I wake up. But then Jim capping it and saying, no, you're praying to her, Abba. Why should he hear your prayers if you don't take care of her? Yeah. Next, not letting your heart get flabby and inactive. Not letting your heart get flabby and inactive. So I guess the question is, what do you do on a daily basis to recharge with God? And it's funny, everybody does different. Like, I not a statement for everybody, but one of the guys asked me afterwards because of this, what do you do for devotions? Do you do that read the Bible through in a year thing? And I said, I don't really do that because I don't learn like that. You know, reading 3 chapters, 2 here and 2 there in the Old Testament, whatever. No, I don't. I said, and honestly, what you're doing I said to him Thursday morning, says what I do. I've learned, and I learned from a friend who wrote a book, Pulpit to Pew, Rick Blackwell, the pastor at Family Church. He said he did his dissertation. He's got 4 services. First service, he just preached verbally. Second service, he preached verbally and put a thing on the wall, the outline. Third and fourth service, he preached verbally, put a thing on the outline, and had him fill in blanks. Tactile. Auditory, visual, tactile. And then he gave him a test a month later to see who remembered stuff from the sermons. And it was the people, it was when you did all 3. Because I'm not an auditory learner. You can tell me your name forever. I need a name tag. Harry, right? Your name is Harry. Anyway, I need a name tag and to see. And I'm a visual tactile learner. And so there was another guy that came, said, can I watch you do Devos? I just want to see what you do for Devos. Years ago, and I said, well, you'd have to have your pajamas on and come to my house at 5 a.m. And he's laughing. He said, so you never do them here? I don't, but I'll do them here. What morning can you meet me here? Well, he met me here, and it's one of the few times I've ever used that computer in my office, that screen, and he's sitting up across my desk, and he's watching me. And this is what I do. I make the verses bold, print, and then kind of break it down. What does this mean for me personally? What does this mean for me personally? And sometimes it's too personal. I eliminate it before I make it into a Bible study. But I found my rhythm. Everybody has to, you know, everybody dances differently with their spouse. You have to find your dance with him. Yeah. Letter D, getting a heart checkup regularly. I think that's confession. I think that's having godly friends also that you can say, I'm having a challenge with my faith right now, or I'm having a challenge with trusting over this issue right now. I think that's studying. I think that's preparing for the attacks. I think that's putting up boundaries around your life. to prepare for the attacks. I had two men in meeting with me some time ago, and they saw the window between Bonetta and Kim and I, and they said, "What is that? Are you paranoid or what?" And I said, "I don't want to mess up. I don't want to be accused of messing up. That's why there's windows everywhere in this building. No, I want to be accountable to the people around me. Yeah, I need to clean the lenses of my heart daily as I study and take notes. The Holy Spirit in me will help me purify the motives behind my decisions. Why am I doing this? For the glory of God. Absolutely, positively for the glory of God. And guess what? Then you won't have to figure it out. He'll figure it out for you. I mean, I went over to pray with a man who owns a trucking company just to ask him, "Can you set us up with a dealer? We don't want any of these big semis that you have." He goes out and pulls up one of these trucks. I had nothing to do with that. Glory to God. But the day we take credit for it, and the day we want to do seminars on how to, is the day we're done. Absolutely all him. So finally, the question I need to be asking myself is not what I should do, but why I should or should not do it. Does this please my Father? I shouldn't do this. This wouldn't please my Father. I should do this. And we're in a time where the should be bigger. People need to see we really believe this stuff. This little girl that followed Rosemary to church, her parents were so shocked because of the way she dresses and the way she acts. She's a single mom, and I don't want to know about her lifestyle. I couldn't believe the way she came to church. And this little girl never would have thought so, other than Rosemary. And initially, every now and then, if the food is delivered by the same person who took the order, not all the time, but every now and then, Rosemary and I will say, "Hey, we're getting ready to say grace and pray. Is there anything we can pray for you?" And watching them back away from the table, terrified, which scares me to death, no. And watching this one finally say, "Yes, I'm having problems with my 13-year-old. Would you pray for me and my 13-year-old? And that was the beginning. Rosemary said, "Just stay here, Bob's going to pray. Just stay here for a minute." And Rosemary reached over for her hand, and I didn't reach for her hand. She scared me to death. And watching her slowly over a period of months come to church. Our job, be radically generous with your resources, with your words,